What up, doe? You are tuning in to What Works For Us, the Black Queer Lifestyle Podcast,
where we'll discuss everything black and queer,
mental health,
relationships,
art,
fashion.
We take it back our culture, y'all.
Carry my city like some shoulder pads and strap. Evidently, I've been killing.
Hey.
Hey. Hey.
Oh.
What? That's my hey.
Okay.
I have a hangover.
Oh, well, that didn't sound like you had a hangover, but okay.
I can't be loud. I got to use my...
Oh, your inside voice?
My Sierra voice.
That's your Sierra voice?
Yes. Who else got a low voice?
I didn't know Sierra had a voice.
When you look at me...
I saw her turning up this weekend with her baby bump in Miami.
Okay. Baby number three.
Okay.
She better do it.
She better do it. And more than likely, she was going to be smart and she going to get a man a boy.
Oh, yeah. She got to get him a boy. A Russell, Wilson Jr.?
Mm-hmm.
Woo-woo. Russell J.
All right, Sierra. Do your thing, girl. But
what are they listening to, Everson?
What works for us.
All black.
All queer.
All black. All queer.
Oh, okay.
No, I guess I could start to check in since you start. You know, I'm keeping tabs on who's checking in and when and stuff. So we even got to argue about it. You know, we should put like a chart up there. It'd be like,
can have your own personal chart. It don't matter to me.
No, you need to know because you the one care. That don't be understanding when it's your turn.
Because I don't care.
You send me through the ringer.
You send yourself through the ringer.
So what's been going on with me this week? Ow. I don't know. What is this week? What's been happening? Work. I went to therapy. Work has been, you know, a big thing for me this week. I'm like, should I go? Should I stay? I don't know. How that song go? That's a Brandy song. But she was like, I remember it was me, Monica, and baby girl, Aaliyah.
Oh, yeah.
What was that album? Aphrodisiac.
Yeah, Aphrodisiac.
Yeah. You're my Aphrodisiac. But work has been I just think I'm at a point where I need to, I'm trying to get closer and closer to total entrepreneurship where I'm like working for myself, sustaining myself through all of my endeavors and, you know, and not having to give 40 hours to a job that it's just not fulfilling. It's not necessarily a hard job or anything like that, but it's 40 hours. And my thing has been so far in 2020, if I'm having any difficulties, is time. And I'm trying to do time management, but it's really, I can do time management, but it's still only a certain amount of time in a week. In
okay,
a day.
Who are you telling?
You know, I don't care if I can, you know, so if I'm at work from 8 to 4:30, I'm just at work from 8 to 4:30. Like, ain't no managing that.
Yeah,
and
no.
So I have the weekends and have 4:30 to ...
At least you got that, though.
Well, I mean, yeah, I got that, but it's still 40 hours. But, I mean, yours is, what, 80 hours? I don't know. And so I just been that has been, like, a thing that I've been going through this week. I'm trying to process what I want to do. So, you know, I might be turning my 2 weeks in tomorrow and going somewhere else. And it's so weird because it's kind of related to the topic for today, like going into more HIV clinical work and stuff like that instead of just general family practice clinical work that I do now. Mm-hmm. And I just think that'll just be more in line with what I got going on. And it would help bridge a few hours. If I could bridge a few hours where What's in the Mirror and my other work can overlap, that would be perfect. So that's one thing. What else is going on? Still, I'm starting a house here in Austin. I think I said that on the last episode. And I got my kids. And we had our support group on Thursday. And we had like a ballroom practice session and stuff like that. So I'm still trying to like figure out how to navigate ballroom in Austin because, you know, I think I already said this, but culture appropriation of ballroom is real in Austin, Texas. And, you know.
It's all about the education.
Okay. And so, you know, everybody is a part now, or at least think they should be a part. And, you know, and I think ballroom is global now, you know, it's for everybody, you know, every ethnicity and stuff, but like, don't get it twisted. Like, you can't rewrite history with what you got going on. That's a version of ballroom. Mm. That is not ballroom. So, I'm okay with them understanding that. But they'll be trying to come to me like this ballroom. No, this not ballroom. But to each his own. So I'll try to navigate through that. And I kind of went kind of hard last night with the cocktails and stuff. And my head is just spinning. Like, I'm looking at Emerson right now. I see double.
Oh, my God.
Did you got some water? I'm thirsty. Can I get some water, please? Do anybody got some water in here?
Mm-hmm. It's some up here and it's some downstairs. That one downstairs ain't cold though.
Have you seen that? That's for, I was trying to give that Beyonce scene from Cadillac Records. She's like, you got some gin? Anybody got some gin in here?
Oh.
You don't remember Cadillac Records?
No.
You probably never even saw it.
No, I did. I just don't remember it.
That was one of her finest acting moments. She deserved the Oscar for that movie. I'm just. Oh, speaking of Beyonce, I saw Blue Ivy on the football field with her daddy today.
Oh.
Her and her daddy and Meek Mill walking around the football field.
Oh.
You know, they're getting ready for J-Lo and Shakira.
The Latino half show?
The Latino halftime. The Latino halftime show. And, you know, that was a debate, and I'm not about to get on this. This isn't part of my check-in, but a lot of people trying to discredit, like, talking about, well, Shakira don't deserve to be up there with J-Lo. And then somebody had to check them. Like, Shakira is a bigger star than J-Lo.
Yes, she is.
Worldwide. Like, yes. She is a phenom.
Yes.
Right? Like,
don't do it with Shakira. Right? Don't do it. Okay? Because I remember that bitch when she was out, because I felt like she was coming for my girl, Christina. I'm like, who the fuck is that bitch? She was a part of my 90s beats or early 2000 beats of girls. I didn't know who she was, and I thought she was trying to come for my girl, Christina. So that just shows how far back she goes. So definitely, girl, do y'all check your history.
Check your history. But if you don't know, I mean, I guess she is not as popular as J-Lo in America, maybe.
Yeah.
But she's worldwide huge. J-Lo would never be a Shakira. And I, no shade to J-Lo, because J-Lo has done her stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
They both deserve to be up there. If I don't see one being more qualified than the other in that regard. If you just had to choose one, I'd be like, I would probably go with Shakira if I had to choose one. But I guess we'll see tonight on that stage or whatever, whatnot. I'm not red.
Yes, but. You are. You tried it. You can't see either. No, you gotta get
it. Am I supposed to say that? Is that a production? Oh, no.
No, I'm not saying you can't say that. I'm just saying, like, you know, you are red, but I don't know why you don't see it, because.
That's you red. See, look, hello, hello. Oh, there I go. Oh, I'm back. But I think that's my check-in. I want to go get my nails done. We supposed to get our nails done last week, Emerson. What happened? Or this week. We talked about it. I mean, I don't know when we're going, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I never, you did say next week, but you, I didn't, we didn't solidify a date.
Your cuticles look a little rough.
I know mine are.
Well, my nails look bad, too, so I think we just need to just bust through.
Yeah.
All right, that's my check-in. What you got? What you got, Miss Thing? Miss Monica? Don't take it personal.
No, I'm not. Don't call me Monica. My little Instagram training classes I got going on, girl. No, I'm not Monica. Anyway. Not even Instagram. Well, kind of something to relate to Instagram. It was last Tuesday. Last Tuesday was my blog's birthday. So she turned 2 and she got a whole little 2-year-old, I ain't gonna say mommy makeover, I guess like a daughter makeover. She got plastic surgery. She got a totally new look, new name, new everything. So the L code is no more. I'm no longer the L code. You can still use that website, but it's gonna take you to my new blog name and everything like that. And now I am EssenceOfStyle.com. Yay!
Yay! Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
So how do it feel? Like 2 years, new, you know, new dude, new cut, new color?
It actually feels good. I actually feel like I'm more a part of the whole fashion blogger community now because I have a name that kind of fits more in. It's like it's, you know, being in the comments or being, you know what I'm saying? Like, I even have more people reaching out to me now. Like, I've already had some, like, reach out to me talking about some brand ambassador crap. It's a cheap one, though. But anyway, that didn't, you know what I'm saying? I think that just happened just because of the name. So, I'm happy. I'm happy for the future of EssenceOfStyle.com. I definitely feel like it's more reflective of who I am. And, yeah, I'm just happy for the future of it and, well, all the things I can do with it. Cause I have so many plans with Essence of Style. So, yeah, so I'm EssenceOfStyle.com and, then my Instagram handle, Facebook, well, my new Facebook page handle, is EssenceOfStyle.com and it's DOTCOM. So, which I feel like makes it everything real easy cause pretty much everything is my website. So, yeah, so that's it. I rebranded and I did it on my, well, I didn't do it on my baby's birthday. This is something that's been happening behind the scenes for a while now, but everything is, you know, done and out there and that's done. So now that's done. I don't have to worry about that. Essence of Style is here to stay. I ain't going nowhere. My blog theme and everything, that's here to stay. I ain't going nowhere. So now it's just time to work. So that's that. Now I want pictures. And I was talking to Mr. Telltales about this last night. I don't know if you weren't drunk
what
yet.
What kind of pictures? I wasn't drunk yet.
Well, you don't remember, so, so I don't know, but no, now I want pictures as far as branding and stuff like that goes. And of course, you know, I know Franco, but Franco might be busy and everything like that, but I did ask Sunny about it. But yeah, now I want pictures because I need pictures just for branding purposes, just to make sure I stay in front of my brand and people know that I am Essence of Style because I don't want to be in a situation. No shade. Well, I ain't going to say her name, but, you know, somebody else who's trying to get in front of her brand, whose name is bigger than her at this point, and she's trying to now get in front of the brand. I don't want to be in that separate situation. I want the brand and me to come up together. So it's just that's, you know, when all this time I've been talking about business as usual, that's what I've been doing. So that's pretty much everything with me. I'm still trying to figure out Instagram because it's just confusing and I'm, you know, still trying to figure that out. But, that's a day-to-day thing. I'm looking at something new every day about Instagram. So that's pretty much it. Oh, that's not it. This comes out on Monday. So my birthday is going to be Friday. And I keep on not forgetting. Like, it's just like, oh, yeah, my birthday is next Friday. So woo-woo. I'll be in my 36th dynasty. And, I think my whole rebranding thing is kind of like something I'm kind of like, okay, that's what I did for my birthday, kind of, sort of, even though it was my baby that's getting to shine, I'm happy with that. I'm happy with that for my 36th dynasty, like starting off with a whole new brand that I feel like is more reflective of me. So I don't really have any plans per se, but that Sunday is National Pizza Day. So I think all I want to do for my birthday is eat pizza on National Pizza Day. That's easy. And, that's
but
it.
You're eating pizza tomorrow.
Yeah, but I want to eat pizza on National. I want to eat pizza on National Pizza Day.
Are you gonna eat pizza the day before?
I probably will.
The day after,
I probably will. But I still want to eat pizza on National Pizza Day for my birthday. I mean, because I feel like somehow I always miss it in real life. Like I feel like I always don't end up eating pizza on National Pizza Day. So I'm like, well, it's my birthday weekend, so I need to at least eat some pizza on National Pizza Day. That's pretty much all I want to do.
That's used to drop it low on a pizza box.
Oh no! Why would I drop it low on a pizza box? No. But you know, it would have been nice to drop it low this weekend somewhere where it was like, I thought about it, I was like, shit, you know, being single, I should have been trying to get to Miami to do something for Super Bowl, just to be around the male energy, that dominant male energy spirit, you know, get some of it in my system a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Miami Super Bowl, you know, it's off the hook down there.
Okay, my girl, that damn mind slide is knee deep in it, honey.
No, is she? Uh-huh. She's probably all down South Beach.
Okay, yes.
Out,
yes.
Blowing in the wind.
Okay, like, and getting her drink on, I'm here, I'm like, bitch, I wish I was down there around all that, you know, male energy. But, you know, it is what it is. So that's it for my check-in. I'm rebranded, no longer the L code. You can still type that in, but it's going to take you to EssenceOfStyle.com because that's who I am. That's who I be. That is all me. Okay.
So, Emerson, you know, yesterday was the first day of Black History Month.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, did you make a post about it? Like, well, I'm black all year round or something? Like, did you make, I've been seeing those posts. I didn't know if you had made one or not.
Oh, no, I did a quote, though, from Dr. J, Dr. J. Why am I not thinking her last name right now? Dr. Mae Jemison, not Dr. J. Dr. Mae Jemison. That, you know, that was my, I'm like, okay, well, it's black. It's time for me to, you know, put some black people out there. So, yeah. But, yeah, it's Black History Month.
Yeah, so shout out to all my black folks. What's up? I see you. I'm rooting for everybody black.
Okay.
In the words of Issa Rae. But oh my God, like all these Black History Program events. I'm like, oh my God. Even though, even yesterday with our event.
That oh was my God. Black History. Yes.
They had the caravan steppers out there. I was like, okay, y'all better get it.
Okay.
And I didn't even see it. How did they perform? Did you watch it before?
I didn't go out there, no.
Yeah, they had on matching outfits. Then they had the cars out there.
Corvettes.
The Corvette Club. Uh-huh. I was like, you know what? Black folks, we are magical.
Yes, we are. Because when I started, I'm like, what the? When I pulled up, I'm like, what is this? I'm like, did my sugar daddy drop off all my little cars for my birthday? He want me to pick one out.
My sugar daddy took me out. And you know what next week is?
Valentine's Day.
Yes, but before Valentine's Day, it is our 1 year anniversary.
It is our 1 year anniversary. I did just look at that. It is. I wasn't gonna say nothing about it till. Well, I guess yeah. I was gonna say nothing about it till next week's episode, but yeah, it is.
Well, next week's episode is gonna be our 1 year anniversary. Yeah. Episode. So I guess we'll go back. So I guess we're just announcing. Make sure you guys stay tuned. And is that gonna be our 40th episode?
No, I think this is 39. This is gonna be our 40th episode.
Yeah, so for our 40th episode, we will be celebrating our 1 year anniversary. So we'll probably just go through some old episodes and highlight different things and stuff like that. So it's exciting. So I wish we had some sound effects. Maybe we got to get sound effects going to next year because I feel like doing like a little cowbell, like ding ding ding, 1 year anniversary. So I'm excited. Did you think we would make it all the way to a whole year?
I didn't have any doubts in my mind. I'm like, shit. Because I said we just going to have to be consistent and just, you know, well, let me not go say too much. But consistency was, I'm like, we're just going to keep on recording. That's just what we're going to do.
And that's what we did for the episodes 1 year later, 2 seasons.
Okay.
Did we get to take a break?
We've taken breaks.
No, I'm just, like a hiatus. Like, what is season?
Oh, between season three.
I don't know, but yeah, we talking a lot of production on the air today.
I know, right?
I kind of like that. They get to see behind the scenes talk, putting it out there. But yeah, so make sure you guys are listening to episode 40 next week as we celebrate What Works For Us 1 year anniversary. All black, all queer.
For a whole year.
For a whole year. During Black History Month.
Yeah.
Did we even say anything about Black History Month last year?
I don't think, no. Oh my God, when I look back, I'm talking about pajamas and shit. I don't think we said nothing about being Black History Month.
I guess shit, us being premiering our show was black enough.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I thought I was like, that was a few days after my birthday. I'm like, I don't even remember saying nothing about turning in my 35th dynasty. I don't know. It's just, that's weird.
I had to go back and listen.
I don't remember. I don't remember saying nothing about that. I know the pajama things was the big thing. And, you know, we was talking about all kind of other craziness. But I do not remember saying anything about Black History Month, nothing about my 35th dynasty, nothing. But I think I was just so stressed because I'm like, this is some new shit. I don't know nothing about this world.
Okay.
I'm just hoping everything is going to work right. But yeah, I'm proud of us though. You know what? And just a little side note, you know, the whole thing, you know what's funny too about the whole, okay, I want not to talk about the whole Kobe thing, but the thing that was weird about the whole Kobe situation, it was so many people, content creators, mm-hmm. who were recording at the same time and they were finding out just like we did. I saw 3 different like podcasts, vloggers, all of them got the news. One of them was just like you. He was literally recording and with his wife. And his son, oh, Jose just texted me that Kobe Bryant got in a plane accident. That's not true, though. I'm not listening to that. And his wife was sitting there like, well, is it? Right. And she got on her computer, and she like, well, that's on TMZ. And he like, well, wait a minute. And he blew on his phone, and he's like, well, wait, oh, my God, it's on CNN. And she's like, oh, my God, this is true. And it ended like, that's how it ended.
Oh, my God. That was, and people really was like, I had a few people mention that to me. It was like, oh, I heard, you know, that you found out about Kobe online. It was like so sad. I was just like, because Andrea was talking about it.
Yeah.
And so a few other people mentioned it to me. And I was like, yeah, that was like
a lot of people found out about it like that. But it's just so funny when I was seeing all these people, like all these content creators found out about it. I'm like, well, a lot of people record on Sundays.
Okay, a lot of people record on Sundays.
Because it was, everybody was just like, oh my God, I just heard about it. Like it was, that was the crazy thing. But I didn't want to go harp into that. I just wanted to harp into some information I heard about. You know, now a lot of people are, of course, looking at stuff with Kobe and stuff like this. And I found a lot of interesting stuff about him like last night. This was from secondhand. I hadn't even seen anything myself. But one interesting thing about Kobe that I never knew, you know, because I'm not really into basketball. But, you know, since we're talking about consistency. And, like, when he was younger, his whole formula of, like, how he was going to get in the game and be the best game player ever pretty much was, like, for one, he was consistent. For two, though, he kind of always made sure he did the things that other people didn't do. So he, like, never really focused, like, on, what did she say? I don't want to say that wrong, but I think she said, like, he didn't, like, harp on, like, things he was good at. I think she said she studied all the things that people were doing that he maybe needed to work on so he can get better. So he was always trying to get better at things. But then, so, you know, so by the time he got, like, to high school, he went to the Lakers, you know, it was kind of light work to him because he had done so much studying, and I didn't know his daddy was a basketball player either. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot through that. But anyway, my point of me saying this is this. Kobe was all about being consistent, and he was all about studying other people and making sure that he did the things that other people won't. Like he said, he got to the Lakers and pretty much everybody was there to make money. They was just there, you know, just doing the bare minimum to make money. But he was like, he was not focused on the money. He was focused on being the best player. So he said he was never intimidated by like with Michael Jordan and stuff like that, because he was like, he always was just like, I'm working to be the best. So I don't have any, you know, competition. I'm not threatened by anybody like that. I pretty much set myself up to be the best. Mm-hmm. And that's why he always used to get into it with Shaq, because he thought Shaq was lazy as fuck. And I didn't know that. He was like, you know, Shaq was just there. He was just there pretty much getting a check. He said that was his issue with him, is that he was lazy as fuck. He like, you lazy. That's why I'm not going, you know, I don't like playing with you. You lazy as fuck. I never knew that. I'm like, okay. But now I just wanted to give that shout out to Kobe, because that her saying that helped me. Like, yeah, you just have to be consistent and do the things that most people won't, because most people are lazy. That was the point I'm trying to make. Most people are lazy. So if you are doing, you are out here and you're doing something, you know, trying to pursue some type of goal or dream and stuff like that, and you feel like nothing's happening or anything like that, like I be feeling sometimes, keep going, because you're doing something that most other motherfuckers won't do, because most people are lazy.
Okay. Thanks. And that's why, you know, some people get it, some people don't.
And that's
a separation.
But and that Kobe said that too. He was like, it's people make it not because a lot of times they're the most talented or they're the smartest or anything like that. He just said they just keep doing, they're consistent. They just keep doing the stuff that other people won't, because most people are lazy and they just stop when they don't see shit to go the way they want it to go, and they just stop. But he's like, you just keep going, and you know, that's just gonna take you further automatically, because most people are lazy.
Oh, snap. You better say that word. So, yes, just so shout out to Kobe and rest in peace. And
the Mamba mentality.
Yes, Black Mamba. Rest in peace to Gianna and, you know, condolences to Vanessa.
Yeah, yes.
And you guys on social media, be a little bit more softer. Be a little bit more softer. Like, yeah. We're just formulated to be so hard and harsh about everything. Like, so many people had so much to say about her, you know, her post. She didn't write that and da 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 da. It's like, why does that even matter?
Right.
You know, like, of course she probably didn't write that.
Of course, right.
Why would she be sitting there writing a 4-page letter about her husband and her daughter that just died?
Right. In
a fucking fatal helicopter crash. Right.
Right.
So I just wish we were just in a more softer culture. Right. A little bit more tender. It just everything is just so this negative, sensational, like,
but I think
response to everything.
I agree. But I think that It is. You're right. It is. That does exist. But then I think the people who are more soft, who are more, you know, the people who I was watching who was literally crying and talking about, you know, Kobe and his family and having condolences for his wife and the kids. You know what I'm saying? I feel like that stuff kind of gets pushed down.
Yeah.
The stuff that is, you know, the negative stuff, like you're talking about, is the stuff that's always enhanced. Just like all those people.
Conspiracies and stuff.
Well, the conspiracies too. But you know what's interesting?
They're talking about the NBA killed Kobe.
But you know what's interesting, though? That I never knew that somebody... shout out to Nicole Cooper on Facebook. I've been following her for years. But she said that his best friend said that he always said that he wanted to pass away early. She said that his best friend said it a few times, that he said he was like, he did not want to grow old. He wanted to die young. She said, I'm like, that's interesting. Mm. Not interesting, sad, but... Just because I guess he figured he had a assignment here and he wasn't going to take him that long to get it done. And I guess that's just maybe what he was thinking. But anyway, but the conspiracy theory, but I wasn't even talking about them. I was just talking about all them other people.
But what if that one guy, we got to get on that topic. What if that one guy, because I thought about you because I don't know if you follow him. The one guy that's getting a lot of attention and talking about the NBA killed him, but he was like recording himself, but he was like in a park. And it was like, well, what do you? Are you homeless? I think he like Dr. Umar. Like,
I know he's talking about. I thought he was talking about because some of my boys be getting into it with him. I know who you're talking about.
And it was like, and so he was all on Twitter and he was like recording these videos and then the phone dropped. And then while he was on live and he got it, it was like, well, why are you outside recording, right? And they was like, is he homeless? It was just so funny because he was just going in. And he was literally in the park. Like, you could see, like, the monkey bars.
Oh, my gosh.
They're like, who goes to a park and record a video, like, a children's park?
It was,
like, the weirdest scenario. And so, I thought about you because I know you'd be...
I know who you're talking about. I want to say his name so bad, but I can't think of it right now. Because two of the guys I follow actually, you know, they've gotten into it with him.
It's like Dr. Umar something.
Yeah, Umar Johnson?
Yeah, I think that is.
Yeah, but one... Yeah, he's a special individual. But yeah, wow. I think I did see a video, like somebody post. I didn't actually watch it, but I think I did see. I was like, what is the correlation between Dr. Umar Johnson and Kobe? But I guess probably what they was talking about.
Oh, yeah, he's just been going in. He had this whole theory. But I think the most funny part was, why would we record this in this children's park? Like, where are you? Like, more people was concerned about that than what he was talking about.
Okay.
But well, today is National Black HIV Awareness Day, which is the 2020 theme is We're in This Together. Now, this day started back in 1999 as a grassroots educational effort to raise awareness about HIV and AIDS prevention, care, and treatment in communities of color. And so, you know, me and Ebison was just talking about that word, communities of color. POC. You know, we're, and I think I've said about it before too. It's like, you know, I've always think like POC is just another way of saying non-black in a lot of ways. But anyway, that's not what we're talking about. But it's just interesting that it says community of colors. So I guess that's what we kind of wanted to talk about today. You know, we are a Black Queer Lifestyle podcast, and you really can't be a podcast about Black queer people and not talk about HIV. And I feel like today would be it's the day to talk about it, since it's what today is. And so the CDC just released the 2018 numbers and around HIV in America. And what they have so far, what I'm looking at, I'm trying to, you know, I'm not a fact, you know, these fact sheets, honey, I'll be like, what's going on? What did it say? Black African Americans account for a higher proportion of new HIV diagnosis. And people with HIV compared to other races, ethnicities, okay? In 2018, Black African Americans accounted for 13% of the U.S. population, right? Mm. But 42% of the new HIV diagnosis in the United States. Mm. So 13% of the population, but 42% of the new diagnosis in 2008. And these are all current. These are recent numbers from the CDC. Mm. I mean, so that's enough, right? Alone, that yeah. quote alone, right? 13% versus 42 new diagnoses. And so, of course, so I wanted to get on a lot of few topics about this, right? Because, mm-hmm. What a lot of the HIV prevention world have been pushing is you equals you. Mm-hmm. So basically, undetectable equals untransmittable. And basically, a person with HIV who takes HIV medicine as prescribed and gets and stays virally suppressed or undetectable can stay healthy and has effectively no risk of sexually transmitting HIV to HIV negative partners. And that is a fact from the CDC at this point. But, you know, it's so weird because so many people still don't believe that. They still think that's some kind of, like, myth. Like, why do you think it, like, takes, like, I mean, and we're going to get into that whole thing, but why do you think, like, people still, like, you still, I've still see comments around, like, I don't care what the CDC, so you care what the CDC say about everything else, but the CDC has said, you know, undetectable HIV positive person cannot transmit HIV to a negative person, but you still, like, uh-uh.
I mean, I think, I understand, no, I don't, well, I don't understand, like, okay, I'm not going to say I don't understand not listening to the CDC, but I will say that, you know, being extra cautious, if that's what they're just being, like, I'm just going to be extra cautious and I'm just going to play it safe anyway, I guess I can kind of, if they said it that way, like, well, I'm just going to make sure I'm extra safe, I'm not, you know, that could be very well true, but I'm still going to make sure that I'm good regardless, and I'm gonna make sure I'm protected regardless.
So, but what's protected though? And this is just, I guess, devil's advocate, because, I mean, these are the same people saying a condom will protect you. So, like, what's protected? Are, like, protected based on what the CDC say?
No, based on what they say. If they don't listen, if they don't believe the CDC with that, then no, it's whatever they say. So if they feel like they want a condom, they want to be on PrEP, they want to do whatever, I think that would just depend on the person. So that's the person's, that would be for them to determine however they feel most comfortable, most protected, most safe, if based off of whatever that their thought is of being protected.
Right, and I definitely understand that, right? It's no shame of in people wanting to, I mean, it's shame in not understanding science, I will say that, because the idea of being extra protected is you're still using science. So you just, it really just, honestly, it's just, you know, posphobia, because like the idea is the same people who said putting a condom on will protect you. Whatever you think is protection is based on what the CDC told you.
Well, yeah.
And so you decided to go with that version of the story and not this version of the story because of posphobia.
Well, but right. Well, I guess that's what I was just saying. Like, maybe if they just rephrased it a little bit, not saying you're not to discredit. Well, I guess they are like, no, I don't care what they're saying. But my thing is, I feel like maybe in the way they're just saying, well, I just want to make sure I'm protected regardless. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just, you know, I'd rather be safe than sorry.
But, and I'm not against that and not towards you, but the idea said, I'd rather be safe. Being safe is based on what the CDC tells you what is safe. Like, so what do you mean? So the only safe is not having sex. That's the only safe. Everything yeah. else is based on science. Like, after this is the only safe, you know. And so essentially they're choosing one part of science over the other from the same people, the scientists that determine, like, if you wear a condom, that protects you, but that's only 99% true. I mean, but these are the same organizations and scientists who said that if you virally suppress. So, I mean, I get the concept, like what you said, like the mentality, but it really is, really, it's still posphobia in a way, because you're choosing what science around the same topic. It's like, well, I'm going to choose this version versus this version when they're both scientifically proven to be true.
Well, you know, people do that all the time.
Right. You know, so it's kind of a version of posphobia. But I mean, and my thing is, posphobia is not good. But I feel like the first step is really just admitting it and accepting it. You know what I'm saying? Like, and especially it, from a culture standpoint, right? We get it. A lot of people don't know, like, HIV is still, the stigma around HIV is really the culture we live in, right? Yeah. You know, it's not, we have not gotten better. So I can't just say that people are more comfortable with it and people like people are uneducated around a lot of things. So we can't just look at like HIV, expect people to know better.
Yeah.
With that, you know what I'm saying? Like, and so I just wish more people would just admit that they are being posphobia and not try to rationalize their posphobia. Because maybe you would take the time to kind of like educate, not even educate, because it's not really hard, right? it's not like it's so much science that you need to flip through in regards to HIV AIDS. It's kind of the basics. It's only like, you know. And so that's just interesting. So I was reading an article from one of my favorite kind of persons. He got a new book coming out, and I can't wait to get it. George Johnson. He's a HIV positive advocate. And he wrote an article against you equals you. And he basically like attacked all on Twitter, Instagram, you know, a lot of white HIV prevention people. Because basically what he said, he really don't like the narrative. Like, you equals you, that's fine. But that's not the narrative we should be pushing, because you're trying to make people be more comfortable with the idea that it's untransmittable. But the people that's undetectable, we're not spending any efforts to make people live it or help people or persons living with HIV have better quality of life, right? You're putting all your efforts to come up with this formula, E equals you, but you're not talking about the health disparities amongst people, you know, persons living with HIV, or really the new, you know, HIV diagnosis. Like, you equals you is not working when 13% of the population is black and 42% of the population of new diagnoses are black people. So I think he's just critical around the cultural aspect of what it is, the health disparities of being black in this country, and spending billions of dollars around a quote to kind of, that's not working. Like, because we just was talking about it, right? People still like, I'm going to use a condom. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like who is you equals you? Who is that geared to?
I don't know.
You know, like, who is that supposed to help?
Yeah, I don't know.
And then most people don't even know what it is, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know what it is. We was talking about it before. Chetty was like, you know, you equals you doesn't translate much to a person that don't even know what you're talking about. That's like it sounds like a mathematical equation.
Yeah, it does. It's very much so.
And so, I don't know. So, what have your experiences been around, like, HIV prevention? Like, being a black queer your whole life, what do you think, like, what has that experience been for you, in a way? Like, growing up, like you were saying, kind of, like, have you ever felt like, because you like to be abstinence before, like, you have been abstinence. Do you feel like that's the safest, like, what, or condoms and PrEP, like, where's your stance on it?
excuse me, I'm sorry. I mean, I wouldn't say, I'm not going to sit up there and say, oh, well, if you don't want to get any type of sexually transmitted disease, you know, the abstinence is the best way, just don't have sex. I would never say that. I'm not saying, I mean, it could be, I mean, it's the truth to it. If you're not having sex, how could you get a sexually transmitted disease? I mean, hello, but I'm not going to say that's the way to go. Like, okay, well, just don't have sex. I don't know what my view of it has been. Because not saying I haven't been conscious of it. It's always been something I've been conscious of. It's always been something that, you know, I was a person like, no, you got to wrap it up before you know, go anywhere near me. I don't play those games, even though I have had unprotected sex with men before. But I don't know. I don't know if I've really ever like processed it. Like, well, yes, I have. Let me not lie, because I was, you know, I've been with HIV positive men, but I think for me it was just education. And I've always had doctors I've had conversations with. I guess that's my another thing too. My doctors, we can talk about it. Like, one of my one of my doctors my last doctor in Michigan was very comfortable too. Now, he was not gay, but he was very comfortable having conversations, because he told me one time, he told me there was a test done where some guy, and he was, you know, his partner was HIV positive, he wasn't, and he was a baby sipper, and he would, you know, he drank all his partner's babies all the time, and he never got anything. And he's like, you know, it was like all these tests done, and it was like, they, you know, they somehow figured out that, you know, him sipping on babies, he wasn't able to contract anything. And I'm like, I'm like, that's interesting. So, you know, I have little, it's almost like I connect dots in my own little way, but I don't really know if I've ever just said I like, or, well, even in the situation where I was, you know, been with people who are HIV positive, my education on it, kind of like what you just said, it wasn't really rocket scientist. It was just kind of like, I would, you know, I go read this, read that, read this. Oh, this is this, this is that. This is what, you know, this is what, if this person is, what am I trying to say? Well, I can't think of it right now. They're not detectable. You know what I'm saying? They can't transmit anything to you, yada, yada, yada. I think on that level, I just understood it. So I can't really say, I just got it, understood it. And within my own, you know, my own way, I just, you know, navigate my own ways of, I guess, prevention, if you will. And that's it. I never really made it complicated. I can say I never really made it a big complicated thing. Not saying it wasn't shit, but I've just, you know, I've kind of just had my own views of it. Like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, make sure I protect it. Even though sometimes I wasn't, and, you know, when I was in a situation where I was with somebody who was, they, you know, I educated myself with the best of my abilities, like, oh, okay, you know, we have conversations about it. It's never really something I made a big deal about, put it that way, even in prevention.
Okay. And so, I mean, I guess for me on this, like, around this topic, being a community organizer and a social justice worker, or activist, you know, I guess I would just want to, for me on this podcast, I wanted to make it very clear my stance is that, you know, I feel like HIV is a social justice issue. It is not just a gay issue.
Oh, no.
It is a social justice issue against the black and brown people. The health disparities, the lack of where we are around HIV, the cutting of funding around HIV, the new diagnosis versus the population, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is, you know, most people, like, HIV is one of those things where, I mean, yes, it's a virus, right? But it's like, it's so much to it, right? It's like, it's a cultural, it's a socioeconomical issue, it's a division amongst, you know, gay, black, queer people. You know, it is stigma, the stigma of HIV. I know for me, like, a person living with HIV, it's been hard to live in my truth. It's been very hard to come out public about my status. It's been very hard to really try to navigate, you know, what it means to be a visible person living with HIV, because so many people are silent.
So many people are
dying. You and I have lost people from HIV complications before we even turned 30. And that's devastating. Like, I think I brought this up before, but when I think about the book and what I wrote about, our experiences, two main characters in that book has been long deceased, you know, and the trauma of that, right? You know, the trauma of HIV in black queer lives is almost like, you know, I mean, for a ratio of, you know, what is it like, you know, at some places in the South, you know, it's a 50% chance you will have HIV if you're a black person, a black queer person in the South, in America. It's a epidemic in southern states in America, right? Like, you know, we talk about San Francisco, right? They were able, PrEP has been able to, you know, stop new infections as much in San Francisco, right? You know, New York is, of course, at the forefront of all like HIV prevention work, where their stats and stuff is great, but people in Biloxi, Mississippi are not getting to PrEP. And I know we've had this conversation before, but it just really just shows you where, how the epidemic moves around. Mm. Like, you know, they try to encourage these little small wins, when these wins are they're not getting to the communities of the people, you know, they're not getting to poor people. Like, Black poor people in the South are still dying from HIV silently.
Yeah.
Silently. But the, you know, wealthy or middle class white people in San Francisco are, you know, congratulating each other and, you know, living in prosperity. And not to take away from the ones who have lost their lives in San Francisco, right? Mm. But I'm just saying the victories are not across the board. The victories are definitely socially and racially, you know, not dispersed the same way. Like, the people in Alabama are still dying silently.
Yeah, I think that ties in with all, like, healthcare resources. I think in, like, certain income, the certain levels in certain neighborhoods or certain, well, I guess in neighborhoods I'm gonna make sure I'm saying the right thing. I'll just say I don't know what word I want to say. I don't want to say the wrong thing, but I guess, you know, I think just all the way around healthcare in areas of where people under a certain tax bracket, I'll say that, just across the board is different than people that I would say in San Francisco, just hands down. I think, but I mean, which is a problem. It is an issue, and I'm not trying to take away from, you know, the HIV, you know, that being an issue specifically, you know, or that being an issue that's not been addressed. But I just think that goes along with a lot of things that, you know, people under a certain income bracket or a tax bracket of a certain color always gets the shorter end of the stick.
Right. And because the idea of that, like, you equals you, you know, back to that, that doesn't mean that the undetectable person is healthy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They might not be transmittable, but where is the movement for persons living with HIV? Where is the health? Where is the programming to get past just treating us as, you know, stats and mm-hmm. science, you know, research and mm-hmm. victories. Where's the resources on another level? Like, you know, yes, PrEP is saving people lives. PrEP can move the needle forward. But what about the quality of life of people? You know, where are we pushing the idea that, you know, very rarely do I see stuff around, you know, the issue with people living with HIV and then having a partner who is negative in the PrEP. What about the negative person that's on PrEP, right? Mm-hmm. What is the mental warfare, or really just where do they go? Where is the support groups for them to be in a relationship with someone who's HIV positive? And, yeah, you know, because once you get in a relationship with someone HIV positive, both of the people are really in it together, right? Mm-hmm. If both have to take pills,
yeah,
it's not a one person thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, you equals you make it kind of turns like lived experiences into this equation, this scientific equation that does not address health disparities. Does not address, yes, okay, undetectable, but do these people have access to primary care physicians? Do these people have access to, like, you're giving people PrEP, but are these people living in the streets? Mm. Like, you know, we know homelessness is a big thing mm-hmm. in Black queer youth, right? Mm-hmm. And we're pushing pills. So it's like, a lot of things get ignored when we are kind of blindsided by, like, white supremacist agendas, right? Like, this you equals you is not for us. But let's be clear, it's not.
Yeah.
It does not address, it is so like it's like a slice of white bread. It is the most rich. It's no flavor.
Oh.
It does not take into account of the Black queer experience. It's the blandest thing that you can say. And, you know, and like I said, it's great for science, and I don't want to make it seem that way, but we need to figure out, like, if we're going to use that equation, this undetectable equation, as a person who's undetectable, then what? You got me undetectable, but what about living in a world of posphobia? Like, me, who I consider I consider myself an educated person. I consider myself a person really in the heart of the community, in the heart of, you know, mental health work, HIV work. I'm terrified to talk about my status publicly. Terrified. I'm in therapy twice a month to discuss it. I talk to my therapist to even talk about this conversation.
Oh, wow.
You know, and because one of my biggest things is I don't want people who, you know, as a Black, I don't consider myself too radical, but I think I consider myself radical enough. I'm a Black queer radical. So I don't fuck with, you know, hetero folks that, you know, try to use my Black queer as a pawn, who don't see my Black queerness, who I don't fuck with their politics. I see them in the community. I might shake their hand. We might be on the same stage getting the same award, but I don't fuck with you, and you don't fuck with me, and that's fine. But I don't want, now that you know my status, or, you know, that you know, it's like this showing love. You didn't show love before as my Black, you know what I'm saying? Don't use my status as this fake love.
Okay, I get you. Okay, I understand that.
You know, or the idea that right now in Austin, right, being a Black queer activist is radical. It's not many of us in Austin that's not trying to be buddy-buddy with the popular folks that's out here. That's trying, like, I feel like most times in the work that I do and people that's doing it with me, we're not in the popular group. Now, we might be because of what we're doing, but our works don't align, right? Mm-hmm. You know, my work is not getting invited. Like, when I'm talking about HIV, people are not coming, other organizations not coming to try to collaborate.
Oh, yeah.
With these topics.
Yeah.
You know, these pro-Black folks are not trying to do real Black queer initiatives. They do some work, you know, they get a little token queer in their corner, and they feel like, oh, well, I'm doing the work. I'm all inclusive. I'm doing it for Black folks, queer folks. No, you're not. Your initiatives is it does not include the Black queer experience. And I'm okay with that. And most of the time it's a separation, right?
Well, I have a question about that because I'm not trying to defend them, but I feel like with all these different initiatives that people are trying to push, you know, a word that I use in my, you know, the world of entrepreneurs, niched. It's a lot of different niches that comes, and some people's niches are like, you know, some pro-black people are pro-Black women, and they do things for women, and then you have, of course, the people who are pro-Black, Black gay and queer, or pro-Black, Black gay and queer. You can even niche that down. So my thing is, is it fair to, like, knock them if they're niched and their initiative is to push one thing and they might not necessarily seem like they are being sensitive to a topic in the queer community when that's not really a part of their niche?
But it is. Like, if you're a Black woman organization, where's the trans women in your organization? Where's the trans... Like, how are... If 50 Black women in Austin... It's some powerful Black trans women doing a lot of work. Are they not considered visible enough for them to be included, and they're not a part of the initiative? You know, when it's a lot of work that's being done that alienate the Black queer experience. It's very little overlap in Austin. You know, if you're doing police reform, we'll talk about, you know, how Black queer people are, you know, it's data out there that, you know, trans women are being arrested at higher rates and things like that. So I'm not saying do.
But I still feel like that's kind of going out. That could be still going outside of their niche. If that's not something that they, I'm not saying that they're ignoring it, but that's just not their primary focus.
But like, what's the focus?
If it could be anything. It could be
black women.
Well, maybe it's not. That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's not just pro-black women. Maybe it's pro-black women. I don't know the exact details. Maybe it's pro-black women with, I don't know. It could be a pro-black woman, I don't know, with breast cancer or something like that. Like,
That's different, right? But if that's the case, but if you've been doing programming for 10 years and you pro-black, then, and none of your initiative has been around, in none of your work you can find an initiative or find a cause or find a problem that's in the most marginalized community of the community that you say you fight for, then that's, to me, is an issue. Like, you can't say that you do all this work for black folks for all these years and you have done nothing to around the visibility of black, queer, and trans people. I just don't see it. How?
Well, that's a whole nother argument. Actually, I do have an argument, but not personally, but I just, I've been listening to a lot of different people's perspectives lately, and there is an argument to that.
What, pushing the agenda and all that?
Not that.
Oh.
I'm just saying, as far as some people just feel like at the top of everything, some people just like, we're black. Like, under all of it, there's a lot of different things. We're gay, mm-hmm. we're trans, we're a lot of different things. But first things first, we're black. Yeah. And I'm not saying that should be all we should negate people, I'm not saying that we should negate any of the other issues within the trans community or the gay community as far as black people go. But I think that's just certain people's things. They're like, well, first, there's an issue with people being black. And, in period, mm-hmm. like being black in the United States or in the world is just an issue. You black. That's just a problem. People see you as problematic or they want to fetishize you or that's just an issue. You're black. So that would probably be a lot of people's, not a lot. Some people I know's argument. This is like, we got to talk about these black issues first, because even some people feel like, as far as black people who are, let me make sure I say this right. Black people, sometimes when they feel like they get passes, when they go under, like, they go to the LGBT communities and stuff like that, and this primarily other or Anglo, that they get a pass or that they're looking out for their best interest. Some people say, no, they still have the same white supremacist views as anybody else. So,
of course.
Yeah.
And so why I hear that, I 1,000% disagree with that, because think about it on the other side. Any black, think about black queerness. Organization, it's not one single black queer issue that's not a black issue.
Yeah, sure.
Like, so it's always black. Anything that you're fighting for black folks include queer people and trans people.
That's what they're saying, though.
And so that's what it is. So these organizations that could never find that, what they want to call a niche, like, just flip it on the other side. Like, any straight person, any black person can get the same benefits for any movement that a black queer person is fighting for. Any black queer movement involves black folks. Even if it's black trans women or black women or HIV, whether they, people are queer or not queer, right? Almost any black queer movement is the benefit of black people. Period. Because the same fight is aligned.
Well, right.
But on the other end, so I feel like it's no way that you could. So it goes both ways, right? Like, any black movement should include black and queer.
Well,
and
it's not
people.
That it's not that they're not including them. That's what I guess. That's what I was trying to say. Not that they're not including them. They're just saying, I see you as black first. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like that same thing with not the same thing.
Well, you could be black folks, but these organizations don't have black queer people on their boards. They're not in initiative. They're not at the table. They're not getting the funding. They're not. So it's not that the issues have to be specifically about queer people. You have to have black queer people involved.
Okay. And I think that, okay. I agree with what you're saying. I'm just saying, that, and I'm not, but I'm saying the people I'm talking about are not excluding black gay people. Mm-hmm. They're just saying, I see you as black first. You're black first. You have, you know, you're black. You black in America. Yeah, you have a lot of things that go, and I think they are, maybe what I would probably say is they need to be more sensitive to our issues being black and queer. They need to be a little bit more sensitive to that. Don't just say, well, you're black. Well, yeah, I'm black and I'm black and queer and a man. I have a little extra going on with me, right, too, that I have something extra that's making it even more harder for me. You know what I'm saying?
The intersectionalities of oppression, right?
Well, right. And so that's what I'm saying. I feel like they should be more sensitive to that. And I feel like that is a lack from where I hear a lot of the guys. That's where they're very non-sensitive to that. It's like, we need the LGBT community, but y'all not sensitive to us being LGBT. It's like, yeah, y'all just like, you know, y'all you're black and da-da-da. You gonna have my back when I'm fighting this white supremacist. Yeah, but I'm gay too, motherfucker. Okay. I'm gonna beat this bitch ass, but recognize that I'm gay, okay? Right. And I have issues, okay? You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like sometimes they're not sensitive to that. Because they just like, well, you know, we black and da-da-da. Yeah, but I'm black and I'm gay. So, you know, I got some other stuff going on, too. Right. We can't not be sensitive to that. I think that would be my argument. You have to be sensitive to all the different stuff that's going on.
And I agree. I feel like that's a really a great way to put it because, I mean, that's really what it is, right? They don't see your queerness, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why, like, in most cases, when I walk in the room as the all-black person, and then when I go into other black spaces, I'm walking into the room as the queer person.
Yes.
And then now I got to walk in the room as the black queer HIV person. And that is just, it's like the burden of just existing.
Yeah.
You know, the burden of being visible. It's like you wear like all these labels and all these, you know, it's like I feel it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, literally, every meeting and every, being, you know, a commissioner. Like, every time I walk in that room, I'm the only black person. Mm-hmm. And when I do the black stuff, right, when I do, you know, be around the black people and their initiatives and organizations and stuff, and most of the time, I'm the only queer person. Mm-hmm. And that's doing that. And it's a lot of us, you know. Again, I'm sharing my experiences, but I'm pretty sure it's across the board, especially being in a city like this, where you know, your blackness and your queerness is usually not seen. And one of the main reasons why I wanted to like come out with my status because so many people still die in the silence.
Mm-hmm.
We know so like the stigma around HIV is. Like, from my own experience, right? This is something new for me. Like, I'm in a support group, and one of the main things I said, like, I'm not coming to the table as someone who knows how to navigate this. Like, every day is a challenge for me to show up as, like, my whole self.
Mm.
It's not easy. It's not easy. I don't know, because it feels very personal to me. I feel very vulnerable, I'm sharing too much of myself, right? I feel it, like, I know the greater good of what I'm doing, but it's not an easy feeling. It's a very uncomfortable feeling.
Mm. I mean, let me be clear. I can't speak or say how you should feel or how, I'm not trying to speak to that, listeners. I'm not trying to tell him how he should feel because how he feels is how he feels and that's valid, period. I guess I'm just going to keep stressing what I've been stressing lately because I do, ever since I found out about this, I'm like, that is so true that when you have issues or stuff that goes on with you and anything, it's like, you know, I think getting to the other side of being able to flip it and turn it into your superpower. I feel like it's not an illness, it's not a necessary superpower, but or something that's a stigma, I'll say. Because it's not, you know, it's like something like that that's like a stigma like that. It's not easy, but I feel like it can be a superpower for people who are dying in silence. I feel like if you have the courage to come, you know, like you just did, to come out and to say, yes, I'm a person who is HIV positive. You can take that and flip it and turn it into a superpower and use that to help all these people, which you're going to do. Duh, mm-hmm. You're doing that. But I'm just saying, I think if you come to a point where if you could get to a point where you can use it, or, you know, where you can be comfortable with them, like, okay, this is a superpower for me. Yes, it's a challenge I've dealt with, but it's actually a superpower because I'm going to use it to help other people. If you look at it from that angle, I think that can make it, I think I would feel better. I think I would feel better about it. I mean, I just think anybody who has any type of traumatic issues, any type of thing that you went through, if you can, you know, do the soul searching and actually get to a point where you heal from it and you flip it and turn it to, it can actually end up being a beautiful thing. It sounds weird, but I think that's how I kind of look at it. It's a person on YouTube. I know you're not a YouTuber, but it's a person on YouTuber, King of Reeds. I've talked about him before. Mm-hmm. I think you would like him. He's HIV positive. He was going in on Tyler Perry the other week about his movie. And he just came out and said it. You know, I'm a Black African American man that's HIV positive. And da, 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 da. You know what I'm saying? He was just going in. But, you know, he was just talking about how he felt like Tyler Perry's conceited. And he doesn't do anything for anybody but himself. And all he thinks about himself. And he's not using any of his bills to help other people in the community. He's just being selfish. But, you know, I felt when he said that, you know, him saying it so comfortably, it was almost like I have a newfound respect for him. He just like, you know, I this is something that's going on with me, and I know people out here need help, and you're being a selfish bastard.
Right.
And, you know, there's other people out here like me that need help, and, you know, that need healing and all this kind of stuff, and you use your money for all your own stuff, you writing all your own shit. It was just the way he delivered, you know what I'm saying? But I feel like, I mean, clearly and it's funny, he's from the South. He's from the South. But it's, I guess, for me, looking at that, I just respect him now. I'm just like, wow, like, he lives in his truth.
Yeah, and you know, and it's a lot of people. Like, I was just talking about George Johnson,
yeah,
Guy Anthony, and countless others. You know, one of my biggest things about, it's my own personal struggle, right?
Yeah, right. Right.
I'm new to it.
Yeah, right.
And you know, I wish I could just wake up and
it's a process.
It's a process. And I felt like before, like, I wanted people, I wanted to be at a certain place before I came out with this, because I wanted my work to already speak for itself. You know, I didn't want people, you know, because, you know, but that was my own shame. Mm. Because I wanted people to understand my work as being like a mental health advocate first, you know. So I stayed away from a lot of prevention work. I deliberately have stayed away from prevention work, HIV related stuff, because of my own shame around it, and I wanted the advocacy for it. Mm-hmm. What I mean, not, you know, in that way. Like, I didn't want people to look at me as a HIV activist first, but I think that was only because of now when I'm being more comfortable to talk about my own internalized shame and stigma about it.
Yeah,
and so the idea of people, you know, because, you know, we've heard like different people who I totally disagree with this about, you know, people who have use their status as like a celebrity thing, and which I mean, we need visibility. When people are dying in silence, we need visibility. I debunk that, you know, idea that people is using it as a celebrity thing, because it's hard to talk about your status and be open about it on a platform. Like, posphobia is real. Homophobia is real. Racism is real. Like that shit is not like a made up ideology, right? This shit is real. Like, your Black queer HIV ass will go through some shit. People are going to be cruel. People are cruel. Like, I was just reading George Johnson the comments about what he, you know, when he was debunking, and he wasn't really debunking you equals you. He was just saying, you know, like, okay, well, what about, you know, putting all this money about the undetectable people who don't have shelter, who don't have money, who don't have health care, right? Like, let's not use this to negate the truth. That's a truth. But I ain't the truth for the people that's being affected the most by HIV. And that's the thing. Like, your little victories or your huge victories is still on the back of the oppression of Black and brown people who are still being diagnosed every day at large amounts, and people who are dying at very astronomical numbers, right? So that's what, like, how can we celebrate these victories that's still not helping the community who's mostly impacted by it because of how much money they make or because of where they live or because the color of their skin, right? Like we're not going to be fake, but a lot of this stuff is fake. That's why I don't really, I have an issue. And so that's why I was talking about work and how I wanted to get. And so 2019 has been like a life-changing year for me. Last year, and going through all of this and like trying to figure it out, like where is my place in this? That's why I was big on spirituality, because I knew that I wasn't going to be able to get through this, easily. I knew this was something that was way beyond my scope of what I could handle. And so I wanted to prepare myself. And so that was one thing I wanted to really, like, get back to my spirituality, because my spirituality has fluctuated quite often over years, right? Mm-hmm. And being in this place of being a Black queer HIV person publicly is, I needed something, And I needed something beyond this, I'm in therapy, I'm in support groups, my altar, I'm calling on my ancestors, like, hey, like, lift me up, guide me. Again, I avoided this podcast show. I avoided this episode. I did not want to do it.
Oh, yeah.
I did not want to do it. And then I got this package from C Plus, right? And what makes this package important is that it was a gift for my altar. And I created this altar to really give me, like I was just saying, some strength and guidance to be able to get through this. And just sit here and opening that up before I got on this mic, it kind of reassured me this is something that I could do.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I just want to say that that is a brave thing for you to do, and that we need more. And I'm proud of you and happy that you did do it. And because I do feel, I keep saying it, maybe not now, but one day it will be one of your greatest superpowers. I stand by that. And I just wish there was more brave people out there who did come up out and share and be more transparent. You know how I am about transparency. Mm-hmm. It helps. Mm-hmm. You need to see people that are going through the same stuff as you, people need to see stuff like that. People being me. Mm-hmm. If I'm going through something or I need help with something, where do I go? I go to YouTube. And mm-hmm. who do I look for on YouTube? Somebody that's doing the same thing as me. And it mm-hmm. might not be necessarily a disease or something as serious as that, but maybe it is. I mean, it could be something.
You can find community on YouTube.
Yeah. So maybe it is that. So, I think, and the people that's on there are people who are transparent. You know what I'm saying? So if, or they're sharing something they went through or sharing the experience they went through, and all, people share all kinds of stuff on YouTube. So I think it's important that it's more people like you if they're able to be brave enough to come out and say it, because I think that can be one step towards helping in the stigma and help some of these people in silence not feel like they have to be in silence and they have to die in silence alone with this burden, or they feel like something that's a burden to them that they can't share because of shame and all the rest of the things, or self-shame that they have. Mm-hmm. I think that if it's more people visible that they can see, that they feel like they can relate to, maybe even reach out to, that could be a step. I'm not going to say that's going to end it, but that's a step.
Yeah, because the issue is they die in the silence because the stigma has prevented them to get care.
Well, yeah, that's
it. So you're right. Like, the idea for me is to, going into how we're going to end with the Art Hills Project. Like, one of the biggest thing with this project that I just launched is really, as a person living with HIV and me coming in contact with a lot of people living in silence with HIV, they're not taking care of themselves.
Yeah.
Right? This idea of you equal you and billions behind that, it is not billions of dollars to let people know living with HIV that you have multiple ways to be mentally well or physically well.
Yeah.
You know, it's a holistic approach.
Yeah.
You know, you can go to therapy. You can have counselors. You can reach out for mentors. You can have life coaches. You should be nutrition. You should care about what you put in your body. You can, you have to have a PCP, you know, like our last episode about navigating through the health system. And if you don't have insurance, right, you know, HIV stigma has got most of us like sneaking in the back door to get our medicine at the the clinic, right? Mm-hmm. And so when if that's brave enough for most people, so you know that they're not going after, they don't feel they're worthy of, you know, holistic yoga,
yeah,
or spiritual guidance, mm-hmm. or, you know, all these different meditations, mm-hmm. you know, all these approaches to, because it's hard, like I said already, it's so hard to be Black in America. Mm-hmm. It is so hard to be Black and queer in America. And it's so hard to be Black and queer with HIV, because it is a social injustice. It is a reason why HIV impacts Black and brown people mm-hmm. more than the rest of the country. It is a reason why Anglos and communities of people with money can live longer and live prosperous lives, and people in poor, you know, areas and low socioeconomic and low education are dying. Like, someone shouldn't have to die from HIV because of their education.
No.
You get what I'm saying? Like, that shouldn't be a barrier to living.
Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing anything. So I'm just thought about something as far as, and I mean to cut you off. I'm sorry. Finish your thought.
No, I mean, that's just it.
Like, oh, okay. I don't know how to say this. I think I wish, especially in communities of Black people, I'm going to say Black people.
Black folks.
I wish that a lot of us would be more open as far as you talking about you saying you having an altar and you know, stuff like that. Because, you know, and I'm pretty sure this was Black folks that was going after. I told you about Summer Walker. Mm-hmm. They talking about Summer Walker was a witch because she had an altar. Mm-hmm. And I just wish that Black people would be more open to other ways of exercising their spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you know, there's so many different ways to it. You know what I'm saying? And I don't knock any of them. You are somewhat spiritual and you do, like you said, you have an altar, some of whatever way, if it's not, it might not be my way, but I don't knock it at all. I still love it. I'm like, wow, you know, that's different. You know what I mean? But I feel like it's so many different facets and different ways of exercising your spirituality. And I think that, you know, sometimes Black folks, I think we are conditioned to maybe just one way or a way that maybe our parents or people that above us said that it's supposed to be, or all they know, you know what I'm saying? They feel like they're supposed to go in that same footstep. I just seen something on X on Nicole, I think today, where it was a woman said she grew up, I think, Christian, and she went somewhere else, and then she, like, it changed her views on spirituality. Mm-hmm. And some people probably would look at that as a bad thing, but I think more than, like, I didn't read the article, but I'm thinking, it's not like, to me, she probably just opened, she's opened up to something different now. Mm-hmm. And she might have a different practice of exercising or should I even say exercising? What's another word I can use? I don't know. I would say exercising your spirituality, because I feel like spirituality is almost like a muscle. It's something you have to tend to all the time. It's mm-hmm. just not something you just have and just sit there. You have to do stuff to kind of feed it and nurture it and exercise it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just wish Black people would, you know, they would be more open to stuff like that, to be able to have something to maybe help cope when they're going through stuff like meditation, yoga, altars, all kinds of stuff. There's so many different things that you can do. The woo-woo stuff. Mm-hmm. People, you know, that altars would be considered woo-woo. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's something that people shy away from. And I'm not saying that's the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe, what is it? I don't even want to get into, because there's so many different ones. I don't want to say I'm wrong, but there's just so many different practices I wish that we would be open to help us cope and navigate through life. Because we just go through so much. And like you said, I feel like we all need something.
Yeah, we all need something.
You need something. And somebody else, one of my girls was saying that, I ain't going to say exactly what she said, but she was just saying how, she was saying the same thing, you know, believe in whatever you believe in, but she's like, believe in something, have something to hold on to help root you. She's like, help to something to root you, to keep you grounded. She's like, because there's so much stuff that's going on. And she was like, if you're not rooted in a certain way, you can just go into and fall into so many different things, and that can be a problematic. Mm-hmm. So if you have something that roots you, that you believe in, that grounds you, so like that can help you. And if that's something, like I was just saying, it's helps something that can help. It's something that you, that's a whole lot, something that you nurture and you take care of and you exercise it to help grow, then that can help you see your way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, like, it kind of goes back to this idea of visibility.
Yeah.
Because there are these things and Black folks are doing it, but the masses don't see it. It's not what people see. So, you know what I'm saying? It's a lot of people, like you said, it's people doing these things.
Yeah.
But it's almost like this eliteness, right? Like you have to be this type of person to experience that, you know? And so I feel like if we had more opportunities to be in the know, you know, to be exposed. Think about like...
Well, exposure is key.
Yeah, think about growing up in Detroit and the lack of exposure to spirituality or
life,
you know, shoot, survival is the main thing, right? You know, so it becomes a luxury in a way, but it doesn't have to be, because mm-hmm. when you are the poorest, that's when you need the most, right?
Yeah.
When you are in the trenches and you in the hood, you need to know how to cope with that. Like mm-hmm. if you're a 15-year-old boy that you or a woman or a trans woman, and that's where you are, and on the south side of Chicago, and that's where you were born and raised, and you just trying to get to school every day.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, like,
or the kids that's like, or going to like the bullying. These kids that go to school and being bullied. I saw Miko.
Who was Miko?
Remember Miko? We was at an event for What's in the Mirror, and it was the one that was outside. It was hot as fuck. And a lady had came over and talked to us. No, that was the second event we saw her. We saw Miko. She's a lady. She worked at the dentist place. She had came over to our table and was talking to us, and she was just talking. She was very funny. I don't know if I pointed to her, you know, she is. We see her all the time. Anyway, I saw her Saturday or whatever. And she's talking about how somebody had just committed suicide, and she knows of a 12-year-old who had just committed suicide from bullying. And then I read up another one. One of my homeboys on YouTube was talking about a girl. I don't know if it's the same people. It couldn't be, because they were different ages. She was 9 and she committed suicide from bullying from you know.
I think I seen that.
That was the white supremacist or whatever. Young white supremacists that they learned from their parents. But anyway, let me stop. But anyway, but my point of saying is, if they had something else to help them with, and not, it might not be the end all be all. They still might have issues, but if they just had something that they can believe in, that can help them cope, you know, that might be something that you said that might appear elitist or whatever like that. If we expose them to stuff like that at younger ages, it might not help everybody, but it might help somebody.
Yeah, because we can't. Because what we have ain't enough.
Yeah,
you know, just Christianity and being a Muslim. I'm not against it. I've been both.
Yeah,
but we deserve to have multiple ways.
Yeah,
fuck that, right? You know, if you go back to indigenous African practices, right? You know, depending on where you're from.
Yeah.
So I'm not here for the whitewash spirituality, you know, that I was imposed on as a child, that it took me so many years to get to. And still just, I'm a new, the baby to this expanding and stuff.
Yeah.
And I just want to continue to plug, if you're in Austin, the Art Hills Project. It is a project dealing with the intersectionality of mental health, or mental wellness rather, holistic care, and the access to holistic care and persons living with HIV and HIV prevention. And what our goal is to create a culturally affirmed pathways. So if you are in the Austin area, you know, we are going to create pathways that, like, if you are newly diagnosed or you are a person living with HIV, you have options to care. You know, you get your PCP, you get your therapist, you get your gym membership, you get your yoga, whatever, right? Like, whatever. But like Emerson was saying, our bodies have to be exercised, and not just physically, you know, but period. Like, to live healthy lives, it just don't happen. Mm-mm. It just, you know, our bodies, you have to do something. And stigma and shame prevents us from doing something in most cases. And mm-hmm. I understand. Mm-hmm. I am a person who understands that, you know, that sometimes you don't feel worthy. You know, you don't feel like you deserve to live a healthy, or you don't feel like you deserve to be healed. But you do, right? You are not your status. you know, it is, you know, and people, you know, can have all these comments about why or who get HIV. It could happen to anybody. Like, you don't know until you know, period. It's nothing, it is not, if you're black and queer, just, listen, that's a whole other episode. Mm-hmm. But I just want to emphasize about care and access to care. And taking care of we're done with people dying in silence, people not getting medication, people, you know, insurance being a problem, you know, like trying to navigate medication, or, you know, if you don't have insurance, where can you get a PCP? You scared to go into that clinic, you scared, you know, to go see that therapist and tell them about your, you know, what you're battling with. You know, a lot of people I talked to. Yesterday I was talking to all those counselors, and it was just like, you know, I treat black queer people, but I don't know their status, right? And I'm not saying that they should, right? Mm. But I just think in my mind that the stats that we know about being black and queer in America, in the South, that it's a 50% chance that they're living or will get HIV. So I'm like, if you're treating black queer patients, some of your patients have to have HIV. Just a fact based on the stats. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just thinking about them talking to a therapist, paying a therapist, and sitting on this couch and not even really being able to talk about their whole self. You know, like they shame. Yeah. 'Cause I was shamed. You know, when I got this therapist, I specifically... I told him, you know, so we're on a road together, mm-hmm. me and my therapist, and, you know, I told him, like, hey, I want to talk about, like, black queer HIV shit. Like, that's the shit that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm going through. And so that is, if you're on, just the Art Hills Project, it is a year-long project. If you're in Austin, we're also going to do, like, national work as far as databases and stuff like that. We're going to continue to collaborate with other organizations out there. So the Art Hills Project on Instagram, bam. But I mean, that's all so I just wanted, my last words is, so my black folks, I love you and I see you. It is Black History Month. Shit. I mean, it's time to, you know, one thing I do like about black history is a lot of the facts and the knowledge. It's like a lot of stuff you don't even know that mm-hmm. black folks did. Mm-hmm. And shout out to Google, because Google been holding us down so far. Okay. They've been putting some really good shit every day for Black History Month. And giving us a lot of information about our own history. Because a lot of times we don't know our history.
Yeah.
Like, you have to actually be like a black studies scholar to know. And that, most of them don't really know facts. That's more intellectual, right? Yeah. That's not even what actually happened. They're talking about more on the intellectual stuff. But it's a lot of stuff that black people has done in this world mm-hmm. that we don't even know about. Like, fact stuff.
That's why I like to, you know... My black pro-black men that I listen to are problematic as fuck, okay? And I don't share their names, because if y'all knew who I was talking about, y'all would talk about me. But, you know, I take what I need and I throw away the rest. And, you know, I don't... One thing I can't say that I take away from them is the education that a lot of times these little nuggets that they share about black, you know, black history that I don't even know about. I'm like, huh? Ooh, they be like, yeah, and this happened and da-da-da-da. I'm like, what? You know what I'm saying? Like, but, you know, they study this stuff, you know, and one of them has like these DVDs, like a series of DVDs that he has they go on sale this month for Black History Month. And I don't have a DVD player though, but I'm like, shit, I'll go get one for this cheapest those little DVDs about to be for this month, because there's so much black history in these series of DVDs that he has about stuff that a lot of historians and people who, you know what I'm saying, are not given the spotlight on, like a CNN or HLN or these little news publications, you know, that the dominant society owns, or dominant people in society owns or whatever. Anyway, I just wanted to say that's one of the reasons why I like listening to them, because it is, I felt like there's a lot of education that I was definitely failed by the DPS system, and I'm a product of that. And, but it's not just that, it's any of the schools, you know, they just don't highlight, you know, a lot of the black history, because, you know, we got a lot more power than what we're led to believe, or, you know, we have a lot of more roots in history on so many different levels than what, you know, on surface level we're led to believe.
And we do. For sure. Then my queer folks, my black queer folks, my black trans folks, y'all are black history. You know, what did Angelica Ross, I think I posted it on my page yesterday. What did she say? I wanted to post it in the Black Austin group, but I'm like, child, I don't got time to be arguing with these folks.
Ooh, right. Oh,
right. But it was like Black History. This is from Angelica Ross from Post. Black History Month reminders. You're not pro-black when you're transphobic and homophobic. Black, trans, and queer folks are here to liberate us all. Masters 2 will not dismantle the master's house, but we will. If you are agents of white supremacy, if you participate in our oppression, Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. So there is no Black Lives if it doesn't include trans. Like, you can't be homophobic. Like I'm black. Like you said, based on I'm black. So you can't be transphobic to black. Well, you can't be. That's a whole other subject.
Yeah.
So again, my black folks, it's Black History Month. My black, queer, trans folks, I see you, love you. You are on the front lines of every movement since the, you know, the day of time. And my black, queer, Latinx, and HIV positive folks and HIV negative folks, or people who don't disclose their status, yeah, I see you, I hear you, I'm with you on this road. The idea of this is to do my part to stop people from dying in silence. So we just have to fight past phobia and stigma, I mean, and make our experiences more visible. Like Tyler Perry wants you do a movie about a black trans woman or a black man, a black lesbian pos woman. Like, do something, like, show us something different. Like, how many times do I see a black woman killing or beating up her man? Like, you know, like, oh my God. Like, black people, it's a lot of us that have different experiences. And your movies are so, I mean, it's just so one-dimensional. They make us seem like this is the only thing we do or who we are as black folks.
They're one-dimensional because they're coming from one mind. And one mind that doesn't get those stories right. Let the internets tell it. But okay. You're not even giving those stories right, honey. So I'm going to need you to, you know, try something a little different maybe for 2020. Your 2020 vision needs to be a little different.
Right. Your board needs to have a little bit more people on your board.
Yeah.
And tell our story. So if, you know, all the content creators out there, we know visibility is a component to fight against posphobia or, you know, transphobia and everything else, right, that impacts us. So tell our stories. Tell our stories. Paint our pictures. Have our podcast shows. We need more visibility because it's so many young kids that not even making it out of their 20s. I know. Emerson know. Mm-hmm. You probably know. So, yeah, that's all I got to say. Emerson, you closing it out. What's popping? What's
popping? Well, you ain't telling where they can find you or where to hit you up.
Yeah, so today I'm just all about the Art Hills Project.
Oh,
so
okay.
You can, on Instagram, the Art Hills Project. Of course, you can go to MrTelltales.com/the Art Hills Project. Mr. Telltales on all social media. I am open. Get in my DMs. I have people, ever since I've been started talking about HIV work on my page and Instagram, like, people have been tagging and in my inbox, and people like born with HIV. It's like, you know, like the kind of experiences about being a mental health advocate where people share their stories around like that, you know, their mental health struggles and, you know, with the HIV. I love to hear your stories. Your stories help me, and we tell each other stories. So, yeah, so talk to me. I'm here.
Okay, so, first I want to say also, we was talking about, Mr. Telltale was talking about visibility and stuff like that. We need visibility from other people now. If you know anything about me, you know how I am about, people, you know, doing shit they self and just making shit happen. You know, that's why I love YouTube so much, because I feel like so many people or so many of them make shit happen themselves. So, if you do have a story and you do want to share it, you know, then don't be afraid to share. Let 2020 be the year that you come out and you try to be brave and whatever it is. If you want to come out a podcast, you want to come out with a YouTube channel, you want to come out with a blog, you want to, you know, however you want to, you know, make yourself more visible, more present. If you feel like you have your own story to tell and, you know, you feel like you don't have an outlet to do it, use these social media networks the best way you can, you can use your voice in so many different ways, or you can use these social media platforms as a way to use your voice in so many different ways. So don't be afraid, you know, even if, you know, we don't necessarily have a lot of people putting our stories out there like that. You can, you know, if you need to take it in your own hands and, you know, just put out there in your own kind of way, do it and put it out there. Eventually, your audience, your peoples will find you and maybe even something bigger. So, you know, don't be afraid to do that, because we need to hear more authentic stories, clearly, because we have Tyler Perry out here thinking he knows everybody's story and don't know clearly very little about shit. He doesn't even know about attention to detail, clearly, after that Fall from Grace movie. But anyway, that's a whole different talk show.
What's the name of this new website? What's this new handle?
My new blog is essenceofstyle.com. Ow! And guess what? My Instagram is essenceofstyle.com too. It's just essenceofstyle, DOTCOM. You can find me on my page also, essenceofstyle.com, DOTCOM on Facebook. I'm essenceofstyle.com on Pinterest. Only place I couldn't get essenceofstyle.com because it was too many characters is Twitter. And on Twitter, I'm _essenceofstyle, period. That's it. And but I don't be on there, but I do have a lot of my old blog posts being fed to Twitter, to my Essence of Style page. So if you want to just go and get you a good little read about some fashions and stuff like that, that's where I use Twitter for. I put my blog on there, so you can go on there. People like to read on Twitter, so I got plenty of content that can be read off of Twitter. And all y'all fine ass niggas out there, for my birthday, if y'all want to send me some pictures, album covers, mixtape covers, you know, anything creative that you want to send, you can send it to What Works For Us. Which, yes, go to What Works For Us as well. And follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us to leave comments. Leave comments on our actual podcast page, because I still do not think there's any new comments there. Please leave us comments and let us know what you think, or, you know, tell us if we have a topic that you want us to talk about. We're open. We want to hear from you. So please don't be afraid, like Aaron Hall, and leave us a comment. Okay. And that's it. So
happy birthday.
Oh my God.
To you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Edmondson.
Oh my God.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh my God. Thank you, Mr. Telltales. Thank you. And if any of you fine ass niggas share that same sentiment, please send me pictures. That's it. Holla.
Holla.